This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Tony Hendra, is a great satirist. He performed with John Cleese when they attended Cambridge University, went on to edit the National Lampoon and Spy magazine, and did a great send-up of John Lennon on the National Lampoon album Radio Dinners. In the heavy metal mockumentary This is Spinal Tap, Hendra played the band's manager. Hendra's new book is a memoir, and although at times it's very funny, it is also sincere and emotional in ways that we don't expect from a satirist. The book is about his long relationship with Father Joe, a Benedictine monk. They met in 1955 when Hendra was 14 and in deep trouble. The young Hendra had been having an affair with a married woman, Lila Boodle, until they were discovered by her husband, Ben Boodle. Mr. Boodle was a recent convert to Catholicism and had been giving Hendra religious instruction in the couple's home. Hendra had also helped with some chores like clearing out the rotten lumber outside the couple's trailer. Here's a short reading from Father Joe when Hendra is involved with Mrs. Boodle and she is trying to resist temptation. Her nickname for Hendra is Hedgehog.
Hedgehog. These impulses sometimes come over us and we mustn't give in to them. I believe even discussing what happened could bring on the impulse again, which is why social contact between us may itself be sinful. I nodded dutifully, desperately disappointed. Being together like this is an occasion of sin, and we will have to avoid being together alone in the future until these impulses pass. You do understand, don't you, Hedgie? Now I expect you want to get started on the wood. Then she got up and just stood there. Her eyes turned all wide and tragic, and she shook her head operatically. Oh, my love! She rushed round the table and cradled my head in her arms. I can't help myself, and I don't care. I stood up. This time, I was ready. I kissed her, eyes closed, grinding away on her lips as I'd seen Victor Mature and Burt Lancaster and Stuart Granger and Errol Flynn do so effectively. She flopped her face on my chest, sobbing, I love you, I love you, I love you. I want ordinary, corrupt human love. Go before I do something rash, something unforgivable. I did go, in a glorious glow of love. I was in love, she was my lover. I was her lover, possibly a great lover. I had handled a love scene. Love was great, and I was in it.
That's Tony Hendra reading from his new memoir, Father Joe. Tony, how did you end up having an affair when you were 14 with this married woman?
Well, this liaison was completely unforeseen on my part. This rather odd Catholic couple had shown up at our local Catholic church, and they were rather mysterious. She was rather French in carriage and demeanor. And he was very English and much taller than Lily, his wife. I think what actually happened was that this gentleman, Ben Boodle, his name was a mathematician and a very cold fish. He was also a recent convert to Catholicism, and as we Catholics know, the converts tend to be more Catholic than the Pope. And they had as it later transpired, a very difficult marriage. I suppose this rather lonely, unhappy woman, they lived alone in a trailer down in some, down near the river. And this rather unhappy, lonely, trapped woman fell for an awkward adolescent. And that was me.
She seems to have almost been exhilarated by the illicit nature of your relationship. Did you find that exhilarating?
Well, I mean, I was 14 years old, and you know, I had the sort of self identity of your average mollusk. So I was entirely delighted to have someone be in love with me, which she repeatedly said, if she was very, really quite pretty, so it wasn't like I was just by chance falling in love with a woman because I was 14 years old and desperate. So there was that to it too. I think her exhilaration came as much as anything because her husband was, as I say, extremely devout, so devout that he took what was known as the supererogatory path in matters of in marital matters, which meant that even though having sex for the purpose of procreation is good, the better path, the supererogatory path, is to not enjoy sex while you're having it for procreation, for procreative purposes. And so he would very carefully remove any possibility of pleasure either for himself or his mate by various means, but the most draconian being insisting on praying on their knees before they got down to business. So this woman was obviously looking for a way out.
Right. How did her husband find out what was going on?
Well, we did mostly kissed. But the time came when things went further, and needless to say, as always seems to happen in those situations, he walked in on us.
And what did he do?
Well, rather than beating me up or running me over with his car or something that normal husbands would do, he decided that that we should go on spiritual retreat to a monastery in the Isle of Wight, which is a small island off the south coast of England, and there meet with a scary sounding monk called Dom Joseph Warrilow, Dom being the Benedictine shortening for Dominus or Lord, and consult with this monk to see if what he referred to as this unfortunate situation could be resolved in some spiritual way. Evidently, he and his wife Lily had consulted this monastic gentleman earlier on some other crisis in their obviously rather tumultuous marriage.
Well, you went to the monk who became known to you as Father Joe, and his reaction is a really surprising one. What did he tell you when you confessed to him what happened?
Well, Father Joe was surprising in every way. I mean, I since most of my experience of discipline or retribution or punishment in the Catholic Church in the late 50s was of a physical nature or of a terrifying nature. In other words, the hell sanction. And Father Joe turned out to be a very funny-looking man. He had a sort of groundhog nose and big flat feet like a duck, almost cartoon-looking. But he had this extraordinary stillness about him, and that he sort of folded you into. Peace sort of came off this man almost as tangibly as aftershave. And he was absolutely the opposite to anything I had ever experienced before. He was not judgmental. He listened to my story without contradiction or cross-examination. He used no words like hell or punishment or mortal sin or any of that. And at the end of my story and his consideration of what had happened, he said, "Well, Tony dear, the only real sin that you've committed is the sin of selfishness." And I realized that indeed was the sin that I had committed. The sexual aspect of it was not very important to Father Joe. It was the fact that I had done and acted selfishly on this obviously vulnerable woman. And as I grew to know him, and really throughout my very long relationship with him, which lasted almost 40 years, I realized that selfishness to him was the core failing. It was the one behind every other thing that we call sin. For Joe, selfishness was, and by this I mean not just sort of selfishness in the petty sense, but really living in a universe in which me is the center, in the me universe. And to him, that was the sin behind all sins, ancient and modern, whether it was greed or abuse of any kind or bigotry or pride, well, envy, anything.
Underlying that is really, I think, a very kind of profound notion of the self and the ego and a transcendence beyond that, notions that must have been pretty hard for a 14-year-old to grasp. But so what did all this mean to you, that what you had done was committed the sin of selfishness, and yet the sexual part of it didn't seem fazed by that?
No, he wasn't. And as I later learned, he, in fact, quite the contrary, did not think of sex as... and remember, this was the late 50s, so these kind of thoughts were quite, especially amongst Catholics, were quite subversive almost. He thought of sex as... I think he once said to me that he thought sex was a tremendous idea of God's, because it gave physical manifestation to the most powerful force in creation, which is love. And he even said that he thought sex was a kind of sacrament. And that was an idea which not only appealed to me on the level of not being a sanction, not being a put-down of sex, but it also appealed to me because I had never heard a priest, I'd never heard any kind of religious person, a priest or, as I sometimes call them, Catholics, people who, you know, are pious, devout people. I had never heard anyone speak like this of sex. Sex was always a sin, even thinking about it was a sin.
Oh, something that he told you that I thought was really interesting. He said, poor Lily. I mean, he felt sorry for the woman who had seduced you. What did that say to you?
Well, it was actually his initial reaction. It wasn't he had nothing to say to me before he had commented on this poor woman's predicament. And what it showed me was that yes, I had indeed I had exploited, is perhaps a rather hackneyed word, but I had, and I'm not sure I had exploited her exactly, because I wasn't awfully sure what was going on during our so-called affair. But it did show me that this woman was a real person, and I had never thought about that. To me, she was really just a wonderful, a miraculous appearance of something that would be of satisfaction to my nerve endings. But she was indeed a lonely, trapped woman and a real person. And when it really came down to it, that was what Father Joe wanted everybody to understand.
Including her husband?
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. Father Joe had no... her husband obviously was an unappetizing fellow and in his way a very selfish fellow, but still one had to reach out to him too. As he would put it, if we live in the prison of self, you have to reach out over those walls, over your own walls, and into the prison in which other selves dwell, and that's the beginning of understanding, and that is really love. It's a conscious act. It's an effort you have to make. It's not some sort of mushy hippie feeling, you know. And that really was at the core of his thought.
So was there any punishment or any actions that were prescribed for you by Father Joe?
Any penance, you mean?
Penance, I guess that would be the word. Yes, thank
right.
you.
No, none at all, except that I was not to see her again because it wouldn't be fair to her. And that was really it. And as I say, I was not only enormously swept up by this man's stillness, by his sense of peace, but completely captivated by his approach. And it wasn't long before I wanted to become like him and enter his monastery.
My guest is Tony Hendra. His new memoir is called Father Joe. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Tony Hendra, and he's best known as a satirist, but his new book is a memoir called Father Joe, and it's about a Benedictine monk who Tony Hendra formed a close relationship with over the years. The book is called Father Joe. How often would you see Father Joe and visit the monastery?
Well, I was going to school, and it was about 4 or 5 hours right away, so it wasn't that frequent. But you know, almost every school holidays, I would get down there for at least a couple of days, and every Easter I would spend my Easter holidays at the monastery.
One Easter, you had a religious awakening at the Sunday service. You really felt bathed in the presence of God. What did that feel like?
Well, it was literally an epiphany. The main reason I had become involved with this couple that we were talking about earlier was that the man Ben had been giving me religious instruction, which Catholic children are supposed to have if they're going to a non-Catholic school, and he was a mathematician, a very brilliant mathematician from Cambridge, and he was also a philosophy major, I suppose you'd call it. And he had inculcated me with all these extremely erudite theological proofs of the various doctrinal mysteries of the Church, none of which had ever really convinced me. I mean, I understood what they meant intellectually, but they'd never meant anything to me. But after meeting Father Joe, and really, I guess, really having suddenly understood that there might be something divine in the world, that this man, it seemed to me, was on very good terms with God, this all suddenly became real to me. It all fit together. The evidence of the divine that Father Joe provided me with was the key to understanding all these intellectual exercises which had been sort of pumped into me. And it was almost as if they were all in black and white, and suddenly, in this one moment, Easter Sunday Mass in Father Joe's monastery, they all sort of burst into living color. And I became a passionate Catholic.
But a few weeks before your 16th birthday, you woke up in a panic thinking, there is no God. You were wrong. And you went to Father Joe, and you told him what had happened. And what did he tell you?
He said that the romantic part of my affair with God was over, and that it happens to us all, and that mere feelings would be replaced by a much deeper kind of belief. And he was right. It took me quite some time to understand the force of what he was saying, because with no more feelings to support my belief, I was in despair. But he showed me that feelings are not a bad thing, but they're not something you can build on, because they do come and go. And obviously, in this case, they had disappeared very arbitrarily. The experience I'd had of losing what I thought was losing my faith and being plagued by doubts was, in fact, just a kind of just a way stage towards a deeper understanding of what I actually believed. If one's belief in things is involuntary, just like a spell of good weather, then obviously it doesn't have very much depth. And as I spent more time with Joe at this particular time, I began to understand that at a much deeper level, that your faith had to be earned like anything else.
What I find really interesting about that is, here you are, you're not quite 16. You have this crisis of faith. You wake up believing you were wrong. There is no God. You're in despair. And he interprets that in such a way so that you could see this as progress, as a moving forward, because everybody goes into the stage, and now that means you're ready for a deeper faith. It's so interesting the way he handled that. It made you feel like this meant you were further along the road.
Yes. Well, one of the constant aspects of my relationship with Father Joe was that I would go wanting one thing or expecting one thing and would always come away with something far profounder and more rewarding than I had ever expected. And that that sort of curve, if you like, of our meetings, our encounters, and his imparting his wisdom to me never failed. From the earliest moments I saw him, when I expected some hooded, sinister figure to take me down in a crypt and do who knows what, and instead met this wonderfully gentle, funny, sweet, captivating man, to the very end of my relationship with him, he always had these magnificent surprises. And it was something at a much deeper level than simply having a positive attitude, you know, or being cheerful, or taking the glasses half full approach. He truly led me to an understanding that I had not had minutes before.
Tony Hendra's new memoir is called Father Joe. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.